Blog Talk Radio.
Joe Stazak here for another exciting episode of Callous Remarks with Steve Callous and Joe Stazak. Without further ado, on this 29th of November 2016, we bring in the man of the hour. Hello, Steven.
Everything's good, Joe. Wackiest week of the year, if you ask me. I'm sure we'll get into a bunch of these games.
It was crazy. It was crazy. We're going to look back on week 12 of the NFL season. Of course, look ahead to week 13. See, let's real quick, the most recent game last night, I think the last nail in the coffin for the Philadelphia Eagles, which if you look back a few weeks ago, or it seemed like a few weeks ago, they were 3-0, they were cruising, they go to a bye week, which I always hate the early byes, and then they've gone 2-6 since. Carson Wentz, last seven games, 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. They do dumb things at inopportune times, and I don't know. I don't like to go over the top. I know it's overreaction Tuesday around here, but Doug Peterson remind you of any former running back coach like Ray Hanley or anybody like that?
I hope not for Eagle fans' sake. I can say that, but it's. I have to tell you, I was disappointed. I like the Eagles because I thought they had played so well. Yes, in defeat, but I thought they had played much better the week before, and the Packers had been poor, and the Eagles are coming back home. But it just goes to show you, it's such a week-to-week league, and I think more so, frankly, this year than in years past, because it just, you know, we're gonna say the same thing about 5 or 6 of these games, like, how did this happen, how did this happen, how did this happen? But I have to say, you know, Green Bay, their secondary isn't very good, and Wentz really couldn't do all that much. Aaron Rodgers, you know, this is the first time, and you probably do know this, this is the first time that Philadelphia has given up a 300-yard passer all year.
Yes.
Aaron Rodgers has looked a little more mobile till he hurt his hamstring. But you got to give the Packers credit. They have a chance to turn it around. I thought Philly could get a win here after they had played so well the week before. But I was wrong. So I don't think Doug Peterson is necessarily Ray Hanley. But I guess the 3-0 start was fool's gold. And, you know, a lot of people fell for that, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, including me. I mean, I said 5-11 before the season started. I actually still have a chance to hit that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I will. But
that's scary, but you're right.
Start, I was like, hey, man. I'm really wrong about that. It looked smooth as silk. Peterson made the right calls. Wentz looked tremendous. And I know they don't have a lot of help. They, you know, benched Nelson Aguilar trying to get his head right. And Fletcher Cox, his third personal foul on a quarterback in a third down situation that resulted in a touchdown. They had one against the Lions. They lost by a point. One against the Redskins. They lost by 7. And one last night that kept the drive alive. And Green Bay converted 71% on third down, the highest the Eagles have given up in 21 years. It was pretty bad night all around. It looks like they are all but dead, and the Packers still have life. Let's go back to Thanksgiving. You have a nice Thanksgiving?
Absolutely. You too, I hope.
It was tremendous. That's like the greatest day by design of the calendar year, and lots of football. The boys, I thought both games were entertaining. I will start with the boys. We'll stay with the NFC East. You know, Kirk Cousins almost throws for 500 yards, but Dallas gets it done again. 10th win in a row. Prescott, no interceptions. And Zeke Elliott, a couple more touchdowns. How long can they keep this up? They're not a dominant team, but they keep finding ways to just be just that much better than their opponent each week.
Well, they do have that dominant offensive line, and again, Ezekiel Elliott is very good, but, you know, he's helped by that line. And, of course, when you have a good running game, people seem to forget in the world of the crazy passes now. That makes Prescott that much better. I'm not taking anything away from these two rookies, but to me, that all goes back to the line. Now you have Dez Bryant coming back healthy. You know, I thought there was another embarrassment, him with Josh Norman. It was like Beckham with Josh Norman last year.
Right?
You know, these things are just, you know, I know – I know the wide receivers are divas, and those two guys are, as good as Odell Beckham and Brian are, they're divas. But Josh Norman's
yep.
a bit of a jerk as well. So
yep.
I'd like to see all that
totally.
Stuff removed. Nobody's getting into anybody's head as far as I'm concerned. It's just a bunch of jerks. And then Brian's a fool for, like, apparently sending out a video or Facebook, whatever, that showed him getting open on Josh Norman when the ball wasn't thrown to him. So I'm not
yeah.
sure what that means. If I can get open on you and the quarterback doesn't throw the ball, does that mean something? I mean, again, in the street when you're like goofing on each other, maybe it, but in professional
right.
football at the highest level. But look, Dallas is for real. After the way Seattle fell off a cliff, I'm sure we'll talk about that game. I
yes.
thought they could win out after what they did to the Patriots. But, you know, Dallas is, I'd have to say Dallas and Seattle. I'm not even sure I could rank Seattle over Dallas. It's coming back to what I've called for years the MFL, the Mediocre Football League, because if the NFL had their way, every team would be 8-8. And
yes.
Seattle is a team that's bucked that trend. The Patriots squeak by the Jets. They've bucked that trend for a long time. But there really aren't that many teams who continually have bucked that trend. But this year, right now, Dallas is absolutely the main one that is bucking the trend. But you saw it. So, for example, you go, can Dallas win the Super Bowl? Kirk Cousins throws for 449 yards. I mean, three TDs, no picks, 41 for 53. So
and
what does that tell you?
He needed a late touchdown for a backdoor cover.
Right. So, and so what does that tell you about the Dallas defense? So I don't know if these games are going to wind up being shootouts in the playoffs, but, you know, Seattle's defense is still really good. I think the Patriots' defense is good, but not as good because we've been through it already. They traded Chandler Jones
yep.
before the season. They got rid of Collins and really sent him to Siberia because they sent him to the Browns. It's almost like a
yes.
double punishment. And I think there's a message there. You know, I don't think the whole story has come out about that. Maybe we'll hear it some other time. But, yeah, Dallas, you know, you have to rank them. I had to rank them over Seattle after putting Seattle over the Patriots last week. Seattle laid maybe the biggest egg of the year. I cannot believe how bad they played. And I know Tampa Bay is better, and I know they had a good win in KC the week before. But my goodness, this is Russell Wilson, 17 for 33 for 151, no TDs, two picks. So I think you have to put Dallas at the top of the heap right now, but I would say to you it's virtually by default. And if you told me Dallas and Seattle were playing in the NFC Championship game next week, I'd still pick Seattle because their defense travels. And
no,
I don't think Dallas
totally
has a good enough defense to travel.
I agree with everything you said. Steve Callis and Joe Stazek. Callis remarks with Joe Stazek and Steve Callis. I'll get back to the other Thanksgiving Day game, but you mentioned Seattle. I watched a lot of that game. No points in the second. It was rough. I mean, no points in the second.
It was unbelievable.
Seattle's down 14-5. You know, they get that safety. And it was just rough, and you are so right. I tell this to people all the time because on Monday they're like, I can't believe that happened. I'm like, God, it's a week-to-week league, the NFL.
That's true.
And
that's true.
Things that you cannot foresee happening on paper – That's why it's hard to bet these games. That's why it's hard to predict these games. And that's why there's a lot of you call it mediocre. You can call it parity. I call it ineptitude. That's what it is from week to week. You know, Seattle looked awful the other day. And, you know, I know Tampa Bay's coming and, you know, Mike Evans continues to do his thing. But they'll be okay. If they squared off against Dallas, I'd go with Seattle.
Yeah, I do want to say this about Tampa Bay, and this might have been the wild card in that game. You probably heard the story. Alteron Werner's father died on Friday, and afterwards, after the game, Winston talked about how emotional it was Friday, Saturday into Sunday, and some speeches that were given in the locker room. Another player had lost his mother previously, and they talked about these things. And that is the kind of thing that really, you know, maybe we as fans think everybody should be up sky high every week for every game. There's only 16
sure.
of them. But
yep.
Apparently, and of course, you know, Werner got that interception. Bradley McDougal had another one. Russell Wilson
yep.
doesn't throw many interceptions. And that's certainly, from an emotional standpoint, maybe that's the excuse you can give. But I still don't see how Seattle, with the way they've been playing, can score 5 points. Even though they were on the road, but give Tampa Bay all the credit in the world. So I don't know if you say Seattle laid an egg, let's give them a pass on that one, but I think there was that interesting extenuating circumstance that you don't see week to week in the NFL.
Yep, no, I agree, and I always say the other guys get paid too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, they can come up with a game plan that stifles a very good team on any given Sunday, as they say. Let's get back to Thanksgiving, because this team to me is very intriguing, and they've won me some fake money this year when I picked them in some games on this show. The Detroit Lions were struggling most of the game with Sam Bradford and the Purple People Eaters, and they hung around long enough. And Darius Slay makes a big play with 30 seconds left and picks off Sam Bradford. Matt Prater finishes them off. They've trailed in every fourth quarter of every game as Detroit. They're now 7-4. They lead the NFC North. Minnesota, after starting 5-0, is now 6-5. Your thoughts on kind of how things have turned in that division, and your thoughts on the game and how Minnesota let it slip away?
Well, that's an amazing stat to be behind in the fourth quarter in all 11 games and win 7 of them. So, obviously,
right.
A lot of credit to Stafford. Don't understand Bradford. You know, it's the old, his numbers are good, 31 for 37, but then you see 224 yards. I mean, on 30.
Yeah.
If I said to you, quarterback had 31 completions in the NFL, I assume you're not saying anything under 300, if not, you know, 350.
Yeah, right.
No TDs
yep.
in the pick, so... He seems to have reverted to the Bradford of Philly, or the previous Bradford, for lack of better analysis. And Minnesota's defense, although they played well against Detroit, they're not. I thought they were dominant early on in the season, and they're becoming, frankly, the Atlanta of this year. Remember Atlanta last year? I think they were 5-6-0, and then they fell off a cliff. But
yep.
Minnesota is still in the hunt, so they've got an interesting game coming up this week that we'll talk about. But give Slay credit. I mean, that was I assume Bradford never saw him, but that was, you know, like a 4 yard out. I don't even know why you're throwing 4 yards out deep in your own territory with 34 seconds left. If you're going to do anything, go down the field, try and get a, you know, try and get a long play for a field goal. If you get picked, it's like a punt. And also Matt Prater, I did see this stat. I knew Matt Prater was a clutch kicker, but he is
incredibly clutch.
He is now, he kicked a 40-yarder to win the game. He is now 25 for 25 in the fourth quarter or overtime on kicks to either tie up the game or give the team a lead. And when you see all these other field goal kickers this year missing multiple, you know, point afters and a bunch
right.
of field goals as well, you step back and look at this guy and you're like, where's he been? You know, for me, I'd say I always knew he was a good kicker, but my goodness, with stats like that, that's beyond
tremendous.
Mr. Clutch. That's, you know, that's Mr. Automatic, and give him credit, because in these games that Detroit has come back from to win, he's been a key factor in a bunch of them.
He's been tremendous. Had a 58-yarder in Minnesota a few weeks prior to send that game to OT, and the Lions ended up winning, and so they won. They swept the series with Minnesota, and they are 7-4, and they are rolling along. And I like their quarterback, and you talked about kickers, a nice segue for me. Speaking of Mr. Automatic, I've always loved this kid since he came out of Texas and won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. He has not missed a kick this year. He's made 34 in a row, 27 this season, all conversions, and he kicked 199 yards worth of field goals the other day in one of those games that kind of probably Seattle and Tampa Bay trumped it, but it wasn't a very exciting game. But hey, the Ravens hung on to beat Cincinnati 19-14. Justin Tucker was tremendous. Cincinnati's fading, you know, very fast. It looks like that streak of six consecutive playoff seasons. I think they have five. It's going to get snapped. I don't know what's going to happen to Marvin Lewis, but 19-14. The Ravens are now tied at the top of the AFC North, and had an interesting play at the end of the game by John Harbaugh called, the former special teams guy with in my backyard here in Philly. Your thoughts on what they did there, and with Sam Koch running around on the last play of the game?
Yeah, I think it's Sam Cook, but he said
right.
Yeah, they showed the replay. Well, first of all, let me say Tucker, to add up all those field goals is incredible, but he did kick three from 52, 54, and 57, so that makes it
incredible.
And the fourth one was from 36, but that makes it even more incredible to me. So
incredible.
It's one thing to kick a lot of field goals in a row, but when you're throwing in three plus 50, you know, I'm pretty
you're
sure
bomb.
Vinatieri missed this year. I think he holds the NFL record. It was like 42 or 43 in a row.
He
so Tucker probably has a chance to break that this year, because, you know, they're going to kick some
incredible.
More. But in any event, what was interesting to me, as I remember, as I'm sure you do, the safety in the Super Bowl that they took, and they showed the, and it was a similar kind of thing, except he couldn't run out the clock. But when they showed, and of course the ball was on the 3-yard line, here it was up more like on the 23-yard line or something.
Yep. Yep.
But in the Super Bowl, when they showed the replay, I remember him running around in the back of the end zone. I'm sure you do, too. And when he ran out of bounds, it was like 4 seconds left. But I didn't realize until I saw the replay that even back then, everybody was holding.
Yeah.
So clearly, this is a play that they've worked on for years. I'm surprised, frankly, that it hasn't been done by others. I thought the mass holding part of it, I thought this was the first time. But in fact, they did do it in that Super Bowl. And you like it better if they're out at the 15 or 20 or 23, because even if they break clear of a hold, you know, they might have to look at the rules. They might have to look at the rules. That's kind of a bastardization of the rules, because the game does end on an offensive penalty, but you're really not on offense anymore because you're kicking the ball away. You know, it's really interesting, but they got away with it. It's perfectly legal. They literally had seven guys holding 20 yards from the end zone. So when the guy did break three, by the time he got to the end zone, the game was over. So that's got to be incredibly frustrating. But again, I watched the Super Bowl safety replay again, and they were doing the same thing back then. I don't remember all the holds in the end zone. And, of course, a hold in the end zone is a safety, but who cares? So it was a fascinating play. But I think you're right. Tucker does come out of the star of that game and one of the stars of this team, and he's given them a chance in a slightly watered-down division, you know, because the Bengals are not the Bengals. Of course, Cleveland hasn't won a game. But I thought it was a bizarre ending, but give Tucker all the credit in the world.
Yeah, you mentioned Cleveland. Again, Joe Stazak with Steve Callis, Callis Remarks with Joe Stazak and Steve Callis here for another half hour. Giants, you know, kind of blow out the Browns. It took them a little while to get some separation, and I know there was a lot of frustration from Terrell Pryor and et al. I know RG3 has been cleared to play and take full contact. We'll see what happens to the Browns if he gets back in the game. I still think they're content in the Deshaun Watson runaway. You know, Giants keep grinding it out and grinding it out, and here they are. They're poised to make a run. Can they do anything when the time comes? I mean, there's precedent. We know what Eli can do when they get into the playoffs, when they sneak into the playoffs. But are they getting better each week, or is it the competition, or your thoughts on the G-Man?
Well, it's certainly been the competition the last few weeks. I do want to say this about Cleveland. I'm a Giants guy, and you know I was in Cleveland when Tom Brady made his first start. I went to the game because my son's a diehard Patriots fan. And I will say this. I hope they don't fire Hugh Jackson, because they play hard. They have some young talent. They still don't have a quarterback. And a lot of these teams, we always go back to who's the quarterback. We're going to go back to the New York Jets again. Who's the quarterback next year? But they don't have a quarterback. And RG3, to me, has been a major disappointment going back to his rookie year when he put himself back in that playoff game when he couldn't even walk. He's trying to be a hero.
Yep.
And I said back then that Kirk Cousins could have won that playoff game in his first year if they left him in the game, and they didn't. And RG3 came back to get hurt again and lose the game. And so, but I do hope, because they play very hard, and when you're 0-8, 0-9, 0-11, you're playing against Tom Brady, you're playing against Eli Manning, that was not an easy game. And look, the Giants, it's the old, they did what they had to do. I mean, Eli Manning, 15 for 27 for 194 yards and three touchdowns. Beckham was Beckham. He is the most explosive receiver on those crossing routes. If you get the ball in his hand.
You there, bro? And we're back. We apologize for any technical difficulties that we've had. We got disconnected, and we're looking to get Steve Callis back on the line very shortly, talking about the NFL in Week 12, how things are shaping up in the NFC East. The Giants hanging in there. They beat the Browns this past week. Last night, Philadelphia Eagles tanked again at home to the Green Bay Packers, and it's just a week-to-week type of thing in the National Football League. Steven, how are you, my friend? I know you're back. I apologize. I don't know what happened. We have some technical difficulties, but please continue, my friend.
No, just going back on the Giants, I think, look, if you believe in the history, and I love the history, of course, because I say this 100 times a year. They were 9-7 and 10-6 the 2 years they won the Super Bowl. And, you know, the one year they were 9-7, I picked them to be 8-8, and I certainly didn't think they'd make the playoffs. So I was off by a game. They won the Super Bowl. But I don't know if it can repeat. Look, JPP is much better, had that great interception for a touchdown. You know, great athlete, quick, you know, good hands, can run with the ball. But again, it was against Cleveland. Their schedule gets tougher. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to catch Dallas, although they beat Dallas for their own Dallas's only loss. So if they can beat them a second time, obviously, if they tie, then the Giants will get the division. I'd be surprised, but, you know, the other two times they won the Super Bowl, I was surprised as well. So I have some hope because, again, Seattle isn't as strong as they were. The Patriots are not as strong as they were. So I think a team like the Giants with their history and still Eli at the helm and an explosive weapon like Beckham, I still think they can make some noise. And as you know, they spent $200 million to shore up the defense. Tom Coughlin is not happy somewhere, I can tell you that.
Is he ever?
Well, never, but I think particularly – now, I haven't seen that interview, but if they ever interview him, he's got to be seething that they fired him and then spent $200 million. What's he going to say? If you gave me the $200 million in defense, I'd be a much better coach also. And there's a little truth to that, by the way. There's a little truth
to
that. So, we'll see what happens with the Giants.
The players.
I'll say they're in the mix because I do think the top two teams, Seattle and the Patriots, in the last couple of weeks have kind of come back to the pack.
Well, there was a game, not for first place, but in the AFC West the other day that ended a little crazily. I don't know your thoughts on these two teams. Kansas City now 8-3, Denver 7-4. They lost in overtime. Cairo Santos, a game-winning field goal for KC. And they trotted out, I guess, the Dante Hall 2.0 version and Tyreek Hill.
That's
this week
right.
Had a record-setting day at an 86-yard kickoff return, a 3-yard run for a TD, and a 3-yard pass for a TD with a few seconds left before they went for two and they tied that game up. By the way, at the same college as Malcolm Butler, West Alabama, Tyreek Hill. Andy Reid calls him the most, and he's Andy Reid's had some explosive players. He's you know, he's had DeSean Jackson, and he's had a couple of speed burners, and he calls Tyreek Hill the most dynamic player he's ever coached. A little crazy ending there. What did you think of that game, and do you think these two teams can make a run anywhere in the AFC? I know they're chasing the Raiders down, and certainly I think they're probably a second-tier unit, both of those teams. But your thoughts on that game and those teams?
Well, after Tampa Bay beats Kansas City in Kansas City, I don't think Kansas City is that legit. So, of course, I really like Denver. And let me just say this, because there is one thing I haven't heard anyone talk about, which infuriates me. You got thousands of people commenting on these games. And here's what happened. And the Denver goes up, you know, with that late touchdown, that weird, I guess the corner didn't see the ball as it passed over.
He didn't see. He turned around, yeah.
It was very interesting. But and so Benny Fowler catches it and goes the distance. Now, on SportsCenter, you know, the worldwide leader, they did talk about should Benny Fowler have fallen down on the 2-yard line with 3 minutes left and KC with no timeouts. They could have literally taken four knees. And then, you know, maybe KC has the ball on the 1-yard line and they have to go 99 yards in, you know, 25 seconds or whatever the math is. But here's my complaint. KC comes down all the way down the other end. They have, I think it was 4th and 10 for a first down, and it was like 4th and 13 for a touchdown. So Denver puts 6 guys on the line. They bring 6. They're bringing pressure. And then they have 5 guys standing on the goal line. The problem with that was KC could and did get a first down. Now,
yeah.
Normally, as you know, that's what you protect. You protect the goal line, but that's got to be when it's 4th and goal. Not when it's 4th and 10. So they should have had those 5 guys standing on the 3-yard line because you don't let anyone get by you with the ball, and then the game's over. And what happened was, what was very interesting to me, I said they had 5 guys on the goal line. When the ball was snapped, they actually had 4 guys on the goal line, and Bradley Roby, who is the corner who got beat by Hill for that down and out to the first down marker, he actually was in front of the first down marker and ran back to the goal line on the snap. It's so stupid. I analogize it because I've written articles about this for a decade now. I analogize it to the basketball team that is up 3 and they're playing defense, and the guy gets the ball at the 3-point line and makes a fake, and the guy goes backwards. defender goes backwards at the two-point land where he should be rooting for the guy to go around him and score a layup because then the game's over. This is exactly the same mentality. You're always taught to protect the goal line. Just like in basketball, you're taught to protect the basket. But there are some instances, happens much more often in basketball, where you should be protecting the three-point line, not the basket. If they score a basket inside, you thank them, you win the game.
Right.
So too here. If Denver had rushed six, which they did, they got some pressure, and put five on the first down mark, on the first down line, there's no way that Hill gets a first down. Impossible. And I thought that was the ball game. And then you had all the wacky plays, the interesting replay, Tyreek Hill, he didn't have possession when I tackled him, so he wasn't down because he didn't have possession. So that gets him the touchdown, the interesting two-point conversion that they had to make. So I do think it would be interesting. I don't know. You know, now with the two-point conversion, it's changed the game because if you're down one, it might be in your best interest to let them score. Now, clearly, the KC didn't let Benny Fowler score. Clearly, the corner just didn't see the ball. But when he's running after the guy, you got to wonder, should Fowler just fall down at the three? Should Fowler allow himself to be tackled? Because Kansas City had no timeouts left. So I don't think you'll find – and then, of course, Santos hits the goalpost. It ricochets in at the buzzer. I don't think you will find – I thought it was a ridiculous – I understand you play to win the game, Herm, but a 62-yard field goal to win the game where if you miss it, you might lose the game, which is what happened.
Yep.
I think you want to you know, I like Kubiak because he wears his – I don't think he's a really good coach. He won the Super Bowl last year, though. But he does wear his heart on his sleeve. He said this was a very tough decision, but we're playing to win. We're playing to win. We're playing to win. But that's – you know, I even heard who's the Pittsburgh safety who's on the ESPN now? Is it Clark?
Ryan Clark.
Yeah, I even heard him say, well, I don't think he should have punted, but I think you have to think about going for it on 4th and 10. Really? I'd almost rather try a 62-yard field goal than go for it on 4th and 10.
Yeah,
but
no, I would agree with
that. I don't know if you have an expert in the stands who right there, or if you think about it before the game, you should. What does a tie do to me? Because now Denver is in a hole. So I don't know. It's the loser of that game was going to be in a hole. And if you tied, maybe it's the old you live to win another game, another day. And I'm not putting my my money on a guy making a 62-yarder under great pressure. And, of course, it wasn't really close. So that was the wackiest game of the year. And I was invested in it because I did like Denver. When they scored that touchdown, it was over. But I do think it's interesting. What do you think? Should you fall down on the 3-yard line with 3 minutes left in the game and the other team has no timeouts? And you can take four knees and kill almost all of it, not all of it, but kill almost all of it.
Because you have a
That's a fascinating thing to me. With the two-minute warning, you're correct. So it would have been more time.
I think.
That's good.
He's probably shocked that play happened. With 2 minutes or less, yes, coach, if we get in that situation, they're up by one, yes, fall down and run out the clock. We don't need
to
score.
Yeah, you're right.
I've seen teams do that. You know, they're up one and they punch one in. I guess they were a little surprised, or maybe the other team lets them do it and they weren't, you know, kind of prepared for it. So they score and they give the ball back. And there, now it's a one possession game. And sure enough, KC does their thing. I agree with you there. Let me ask you something, because I always go back to this. There's a debate, you know, sometimes, yes, that would have been a good situation to go down. Maybe a little bit too much time left and figuring 8 points, take the touchdown. It could go maybe either way on that. But in the Super Bowl, the second Super Bowl that you guys won over New England after the Manningham catch and Giants continue to drive down the field, they have an opportunity to take the lead in a Super Bowl over the Patriots. And I know there was about 1 minute left or 103, and that's plenty of time for Tom Terrific. And I think that, you know, the reports were that they were telling Ahmad Bradshaw to fall down, and he said, oh, I heard it too late. He fell over the goal line. If I'm a Giants fan, I'm okay taking the lead there, because I don't want to, even though Lawrence, you know, Larry Tyne's great kicker and it's a chip shot, I've seen things happen. I would be fine taking the lead in the Super Bowl with a minute left and take my chances. What were your thoughts on that play?
Well, I can tell you it's interesting. It's the only Super Bowl I've ever been to. My son was going to school in Cleveland.
You went to that Super Bowl?
It was in Indianapolis. I sat in the next to last row in Indianapolis. We'll never do it again. Glad I did it once. You know, paid an absurd amount of money. But my son, the Patriots fan, was in college in Cleveland. He was bowling in a tournament in Cincinnati.
Oh, that's great. He's a Patriots fan.
All right, he was bowling in a tournament in Cincinnati. I went out to see him in the tournament. We couldn't get a hotel room within 60 miles of the place, so we stayed 60 miles out. Went there for the whole day. You know, one of those things I would suggest to people to do it once. But it was interesting to watch that game because the first play of the game, my son was just watching Gronkowski. That was the famous safety play when Tom Brady threw it 50 yards downfield and there was nobody there, remember? And my son just watched Gronkowski, and he turned to me and he said, Gronk can't run, we're in trouble. And that turned out to be true. But on that particular play, I remember I was not for them scoring because I have the great fear of Tom Brady. Even though the Giants and Eli had pulled the miracle off once, I was not for him scoring because this is where we are now, where you have to worry about things like that. I don't recall this. You tell me 15, 20, 30 years ago, I don't recall it ever should we let them score. That's largely because of the two-point conversion, not totally because of the two-point conversion. So I was actually against them because I would not want to give Tom Brady, you know, like any time at all. And you know, my son was so devastated because he takes it as a younger guy more serious than I do.
Oh,
and we had already gotten
one
again. We had already gotten one against the Patriots in the 18-0 season for the Patriots. So I felt bad for him. But I do remember that specific moment and did not want them to score because I'm just afraid Brady can come down at any time. You know, this comeback he had against the Jets, which we'll talk about, was his 40th career comeback in 200 wins. So think about that. 20% of his wins, the guy just runs him down the field to win the game. That's pretty amazing. So, yeah, I do remember that, and I did not want him to score. But you're right. You take an incredible risk. And that might be the answer from the coaches if he shanks it. And certainly this year has been the year of the shank. You know, you have to you do have to worry. So I understand how it goes both ways, but I do remember the specific moment you're talking about, and I did not want him to score. I thought it was not a good play.
Yeah, what did you think? And they did, and they ended up holding them, and so they get their second ring. So it turned out to work out all right. But, you know, you talk about Tom Brady, and, you know, Jets gave them all they could handle, and they didn't cover, which is okay. They cover more often than not. But, again, you know, Brady doing his thing. I mean, will this guy ever start to – his skills start to erode? I don't know when that's going to happen. He just seems to just, you know, get better and better.
Well, you know, he jokingly, I thought, said, I want to play 10 more years last year or two years ago, whenever it was. But he certainly, he doesn't have a lot to lose athletically. He certainly worked on his footwork, you have to give him. He is a little athletic in the pocket. You know, if you see him run, you start to laugh. But he's the greatest fourth and one. He's the greatest fourth and one quarterback sneaker in the history of football. Without question, he does have the ability to dance around, and dance is the wrong word, to move around in the pocket, to just shift enough. And he's probably the smartest. He's probably the smartest quarterback who's ever played in terms of reading the defenses and understanding what to do. So I think if you're a Jet fan, which I'm not, but certainly in New York, it was another, oh, we almost beat the Patriots. Well, yes and no, but I think he can do this for another few years. We haven't seen anything. I mean, he's even better this year. And I saw some stats. His touchdowns or quarterback rating in his 30s versus the 20s, and not surprisingly, it's much higher in his 30s. But it is surprising that he's doing it at 39. I think he's a legit MVP candidate, even though he missed the first four games. But there are other guys there. But yeah. Brady's Brady, 30 for 50, 286 yards, two TDs, no picks. The guy's thrown one pick all year. This Malcolm Mitchell is becoming a weapon, which he was not five, six games ago. And, you know, they trot out the, you know, Edelman, Amendola. This is all without Gronk. Gronk was, you know, that was a terrible, if you watch the game. They just grabbed his left arm, and he tried to catch that ball down the sideline with one. If he doesn't get grabbed, it's either a touchdown or it should have been like a 40-yard penalty. But, you know, I think there's an analogy between Gronk and, like, Shaquille O'Neal, where they used to just beat the heck out of Shaquille O'Neal, and they wouldn't call foul. I think they beat up Gronk going down, and they just think he should – I don't want to call him brittle, but he gets injured a lot. My son says every year they shouldn't play Gronk in the regular season, just try them out for the playoffs. And you know what? You know what? I know that's
not
crazy over
call.
The top, but, you know, maybe they should give him less playing time because as big and strong as he is, he's – I don't want to say brittle. That would be unfair, but I go back to that second Super Bowl with the Giants where he couldn't run, where he was hurt. And, you know, earlier this year, and now he's hurt again with the back and last year. So you got to keep him on the field because they're obviously a much – he's the most dangerous non-quarterback weapon, I think, even though he's a tight end in the NFL.
Yeah, he's a once-in-a-generation type tight end when he's healthy. Steve Callis, Callis Remarks, Steve Callis, and Joe Stazak here for about another 10 minutes. One more game before we get to our picks, and then we'll talk a little NBA. Steven, how do you think the locker room situation would have gone if Tom Brady had 8 drops and 7 in the fourth quarter like Matt Barkley did the other day against Tennessee? I've never seen such ridiculousness. And Matt Barkley didn't do much here. He played one game against the Giants. He got a start and fumbled. And he just, you know, he might not be an NFL quarterback, but he was putting the ball on the numbers. And he had Josh Bellamy drop a touchdown that hits him in the chest with no one around him, and they're down 6
right.
on the last drive. They
right.
dropped 7 balls in the fourth quarter. Say what you want about him. He was a little bit of a snarky kind of guy. I had to feel for him a little bit because, he threw the ball 54 times and certainly deserved a better fate.
I totally agree on those final 4 shots he took. 2 were drops. The last play was a very catchable ball when you're down on the ground like that.
Ball.
It hits you
yep.
in the stomach in addition to the other one you were talking about, which was even worse. So, pretty amazing. That was an amazing – I didn't think the Bears had any shot really, but – give Barkley credit because he waits on the bench. He gets his chance. I also like that running back, Howard, 18 rushes for 84 yards. He's a handful. So I think, again, what am I going to say about the Bears? They're 2-9. You know, I don't think Cutler will be back. He's got the gun, but I don't know if he has the brain. I know he's a gunslinger, but, maybe he needs to go to a really good team, but he's not the guy who's going to make them a really good team. So I think when we talk about the Bears, and I think Cutler is a good quarterback, but he is not a franchise quarterback. So the Bears, like many other teams, to me, they need a quarterback.
No, I totally agree. Doesn't everybody? All right, let's get to our picks, my friend. How'd you do last week?
Well, I went from the penthouse to the outhouse very quickly. shocked at what happened to Denver. I was counting my play money, late in the fourth quarter in that game. Philly laid an egg after, playing great the week before. I don't know how Green Bay woke up. 0-3 last week after 5-0 the week before, so I'm going to have to try and make a comeback this week. Oh, also the Seahawks, who probably would have been my best bet if I had to pick a best bet. I mean, maybe I just shouldn't bet teams that are flying across the country. What can I say? But this week's a new week, as we like to say, so I'm going to go Saints -5 over the Lions. To me, and I know the Lions' history and they're down 11, but to me, if Drew Brees can drop 49 on the L.A. Rams defense, whatever you think of Jared Goff, whatever.
Yep.
But for Brees to score, 4 touchdowns, no picks, 28 for 36, and a rushing TD, 310 yards, the Rams have a good defense. I don't know what happened to them. But at home, the Saints put up 49. I'm not saying they'll put up 49 on the Lions, but I think they'll put up enough. And the Saints have a chance for the playoffs, too. Obviously, the Lions are in first place. But Saints -5 because of Drew Brees. I'm going to go 49ers getting 2.5 from the Bears. I understand the Bears played well and made that comeback, but the 49ers have played very well. And whatever you think of Colin Kaepernick off the field, on the field this week, he looked to me like the old Colin Kaepernick, 29 for 46, 295 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick, 113 rushing yards, and you saw how the game ended with him getting run down by Ndamukong Suh from behind at the 2-yard line to at least have a chance to tie the game with the extra point. So San Francisco has been playing very well. I told you my son was at that game out in San Francisco against the Patriots, and that game was 13-10 after 3 quarters. So I think the 49ers, although it's a game of 2 terrible teams, I'm going to go 49ers. Bears. And finally, I'll take the Jets over the Colts Monday night. I thought the Jets played the Patriots very tough at home, and I think they'll be able to beat the Colts at home this coming week.
All right. I actually went 2-1, and my only loss was the Patriots, believe it or not. I had Pittsburgh over the Colts, and they won pretty handily, 28-7. Skins with that backdoor cover. I don't know how that game was that. There was so much distance between those two teams with Cousins throwing three TDs, no picks, and 449 yards. But Dallas is Dallas, and I had the Patriots. They needed a late touchdown to even just win the game outright, but they were given too many points. So I went 2-1 this week. I'm going Vikings at home plus 3.5 over the boys. I keep betting against the boys that one of these days are going to lose. So that's kind of my philosophy there. I like your pick with the Saints. I'm going the same thing. I thought that number was a little high as well. Detroit's a different team on the road, and I like Drew Brees and at home, and they have a shot to make the playoffs. And I had 6, but I'll lay 5. I'd rather lay 5 than 6. And I have the Pats again over the Rams, just because I take the Pats every week. They're laying a lot of points, 13.5 over the Rams, and they could make Belichick usually makes rookie quarterbacks look pretty silly, but I think the Pats want to look, you know, to bounce back after just nipping the Jets this past week. So we shall see. We have about 4 minutes left, my friend, and a big story in the NBA. We don't talk a lot of NBA. It's early in the season. You know, the top two teams are the same as they were last year, the Cavaliers and the Warriors, and Kevin Durant's old team, 11-8, Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, hanging around. But really the story there, Russell Westbrook is averaging 31 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds per night so far. He's averaging a triple-double, and he plays with his hair on fire, what little hair he has. Your thoughts on what he's doing? I know people comparing him to the Big O. And that season that Oscar Robinson, you know, averaged that for a season, although he played 11 less minutes. Your thought on what Russell Westbrook's doing, and can he keep this pace up?
Well, I'm still on the fence on Russell Westbrook because I never saw him. I earlier on, tremendously talented, Durant on the team. They made a run 1 year, but I never saw Westbrook in the big spot make that great pass.
Yep.
I thought he was
yep.
too self-centered. I really believe that. Now, where he is now, he's a one-man show. So can he do it for a year? That's going to be physically very difficult today. And I have to say this. I'm an Oscar guy. If you ask me who the greatest player of all time is, I am not saying Michael Jordan. I am saying Oscar. And just let me say this, because I wish somebody, maybe I should write this article. I think maybe I wrote it, but it might have been 15 years ago. When they talk about Oscar averaging a triple-double for 1 year, 1961-62, that's totally true. But if you look at Oscar's top five, his first 5 years, and if you add up like each game, like they were talking about 61-62, he played 79 games, and they said in 63-64 through 67 games, he averaged a triple-double and then finished the season with 9.9 rebounds, so he didn't average a triple-double for the year. But nobody is smart enough with all these great statisticians to say this. If you add up Oscar's first 5 years, and like if he played 79 games, so multiply his points by 79, and then for the year he played 67 games, multiply all of them by 67. If you add up the first 5 years, and I've done this, Oscar is, I think, 1/10 of a rebound short of a triple-double for 5 seasons.
5 years,
so
wow.
Have an understanding when you're comparing someone to Oscar. And also keep in mind, I don't know if you know this, Joe, but I researched this as well. In the old days, in the 60s and before, if you passed to a guy and he took a dribble and laid it in, you did not get an assist. You had to pass it to him, he had to shoot, and the ball had to go in. So I think if you could go back and look at Oscar games from the 60s, they probably don't have the tape. I'm going to guess he averaged 15 assists a game, not 10 assists a game. So I don't think people today understand the greatness of Oscar. Now, he only played on the one championship team with Kareem in Milwaukee, but he was a one-man wrecking crew as well, and that's why he could do it. But he was also 6'4.5", 6'5", strong as a bull. As great as Westbrook is, I don't know if he's strong enough to keep this up for 80 games. But go look at Oscar's stats if you want to see something. And I don't think you can compare anyone to Oscar. Maybe Wilt. That's a different conversation with Wilt and Russell.
Sure.
But those are my thoughts on Westbrook. But I still haven't seen him, and we will not see him in a position to make like a championship assist in a championship series.
I know.
That may not
it's
happen.
Unfortunate, but He is a one-man wrecking crew. We got to go, my friend. Always great talking to you, talking second-level analysis on the sports landscape. Steve Callis, he is. He'll be back next week, 5:30. Same with Joe Stazak. Have a great night, everybody, and a great week. We'll talk to you next week.